Next on BYUSN, game day for BYU men's basketball tomorrow against Cincinnati. We'll preview the weekend. Would this be BYU's best win of the season? And would a win over Cincy help everyone feel like the Cougars have turned a corner this season?
Defensive coordinator Jay Hill joins the program to talk about the Cougars' incredible 2024 defense, which positions need reinforcement, and what's sustainable going into next year. And gymnast Brinley Anderson and Kylie Equinto talk about the big meet with Utah tonight and competing for the third time in 8 days.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Friday, everyone. It is January 24th. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who needs no motivation to get ready for next season or for the next show, for that matter, Jerem Jordan.
Hey, I'm ready. I know Jake Retzlaff last year took a screenshot of Pro Football Focus's top 16 quarterbacks in the Big 12, and Jake was, what, 16th? He had that on that phone, his phone.
It was a thing all year. He looked at it often.
Yeah. On Three produced a list of the top 10 impact quarterbacks in college football going into next year. Interestingly enough, Sam Levitt's number one.
Wow.
Jake Retzlaff nowhere to be found. Didn't expect Jake to be on this list per se, but a little surprised by Sam Levitt being there. Didn't throw for 3,000 yards. Threw for 6 yards per attempt, which is not a great number. Rushed well. Good redshirt freshman year. No Cam Scannaboo, going to be a little different.
Yep.
Or the Cactus Utes, I would say. But, if Jake Retzlaff needs more motivation, he's got another screenshot, I guess.
Listen, I hope Jake, and this echoes the sentiment of many fans, has an absolutely massive boulder on his shoulder.
He's going to Boulder next year.
Okay? Just
playing the ball.
Forget the chip on the shoulder. I hope it's a huge rock on his shoulder, and it drives him all off.
Didn't we look this up, like, in the 1700s, 1800s or something? Like,
put a wood chip on
your shoulder. You put a wood chip on your shoulder, and then someone would try and knock it off. Yes. You'd have to balance it. That's
yes.
The etymology of the word, I guess.
If you wanted to pick a fight with somebody, you would do that. Say,
put
you
a
go.
Chip on your shoulder.
Try and knock it off. Let's go. Put up your dukes.
What a stupid game. Thank goodness we have, like, PlayStations and Xboxes now and other devices. Put a wood chip on your shoulder.
That generation
how bored are you if you have to put a piece of wood on your shoulder for entertainment?
Well, that generation is in the beyond looking at all these video games like, look at how much time they waste. A bunch of slackers. All they do is sit in front of TVs and play video games. They're saying the same stuff about us.
Yeah, that's in the after hours. That's not all day. That's not for fun. That is for fun.
Oh.
We get stuff done here.
Hey, you know what else is for fun? What's trending? So rise and shout. Let's get to it.
When losses stack up, you know, things naturally get a little bit tighter.
And at some point in time, you got to win the next 2 games.
Yeah, I want our guys to know how confident we are in them. You know, we feel like we're right there.
Oh, in come the Bearcats tomorrow night. BYU with some vengeance on the mind, if you remember what happened last year when Cincinnati didn't so subtly take their role and kind of spoiled BYU's Big 12 opener. We all thought that they were going
to. No, they were supposed to lose.
They were all, BYU's going to beat Cincy. It's going to be an amazing Big 12 opener. No, it was not the case.
Trevor Neal's like, I have to make 12 threes?
Yeah, I made nine threes and we lost.
Come on.
So that's on the mind. Yeah. Cincinnati back in the Marriott Center tomorrow night. KenPom, similar to last year, Jerem, has BYU as a clear favorite. Cougars, 64% chance to win this game. It was a little higher last year, but still the same idea applies. Looking at what BYU has done this year, whole resume, let's say hypothetically BYU beat Cincinnati this time around, would this be BYU's best win of the season?
Yeah, it would be. Best net win is ASU right now. That's 57. Cincy's 43. That was also at home. It's not like you have this great road win. You have one road win, and it was against 101 net team Colorado, who's not that good. So, yes, and who knows? Maybe Cincinnati kind of recaptures what they were a couple weeks ago. They were a top 25 team in the country. They were ranked, and they were playing better. They've lost, two of the first seven in league, BYU 3-4 in league, 2-5 for Cincinnati. So, yes, on paper, absolutely. Cincinnati has an amazing defense. Like, they're not Houston amazing, but they're pretty good. 9th in defensive efficiency, 8th in effective field goal percentage, 4th in three-point percentage allowed, 16th in twos, and then 20th in the amount of three-point field goals they allow per all field goals against the opponent. So they are good. Offensively, they struggle.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, as good as they are defensively, they have as equal struggles on offense.
Like Houston and San Diego State, who play great defense, they also have good offense, right? So 131 in offensive efficiency, They 233rd in three-point percentage.
They don't make free throws terrible. Either.
They shot better Wednesday against Texas Tech, but possession length, you know, 207th. They're kind of slow. So, the point guard matchup really sticks out for me. You have Demon versus Jizzle James, who's coming off a season-high 17. Day-Day Thomas, the backup point guard against Dallin Hall. I think those are fun. Dylan Mitchell's the X factor, though. You may remember the name. Played for Texas last year. 6'8", lefty, power forward, long. Matchup problem for BYU. Remember against Utah when there were two bigs, Asar and Lovering, gave BYU some problems because BYU doesn't play two bigs at a time. They play one. I wonder how BYU will defend that. Because Aziz Bandego is the 7-foot center. You might remember him too, Utah Valley, and last year at Cincinnati. He's 2-0 against BYU the last two seasons. So he was a game-time decision, played Wednesday. I'm interested to see point guards. I'm interested to see BYU's offense versus that good defense. And then the two bigs against BYU's one big, like Yegor Demon was getting matched up sometimes with Asar or Lovering. How does BYU defend that? And can you take advantage of the sort of speed, quickness, shooting ability on the offensive end? So I'm intrigued by this matchup, and BYU needs to win this game, man.
Can BYU win a game that is undoubtedly going to be physical? They have struggled against super physical teams this season. Specifically, I know Houston's all-worldly good this year, okay?
Let's leave them out of the convo, frankly. Like, that's the exception.
But a team like Texas Tech, you're physical. They bodied up BYU. The Cougars had a tough time matching up against certain individuals in the post. They got bumped around a little bit in the rebounding scenario. So, can BYU win a physical game? I don't think TCU and Utah were clearly more physical than BYU, but they knew the game plan was BYU on paper doesn't like to be bumped off the ball a lot. They complain about not getting foul calls. They get frustrated. Can BYU, knowing that this is on the way with Cincinnati, it's going to happen. It's going to be extremely physical. Can they handle it and win a big game? And as we were just looking at Cincinnati's numbers, let's look at BYU by the resume, shall we? Like, just to this point, what is BYU doing best? They're one of the most efficient offensive teams in the country. Number 30 right now. This is not a surprise. Like, we knew Kevin Young was an offensive genius and the BYU would be able to find their way. They're not shooting the three-pointer as well as they did last year, which they thought they had a clear advantage against teams like Cincinnati and teams in the Big 12 with that. So, and I said it earlier this week, I want BYU to shoot more. If BYU makes 10 threes, they're not losing, Jerem. They are not losing. And you have a fantastic stat about points per possession as well.
1.1, BYU's won every game this year when they've been at that number. By the way, double-digit threes. Only one team has done that against Cincinnati this year. Texas Tech did it on Wednesday.
Interesting. 11. Interesting.
They don't allow a lot of threes. So is this the game where BYU has to get to the rim and free throw line and
maybe
threes are harder to come by? If they make 10-plus, you feel pretty good.
Oh, they're not losing.
You feel pretty good about that, right?
Trevin Nell made 9 against Cincinnati by himself last year. 9!
Crazy.
Okay? Again, better defensive team this year than they were last year.
Over under 3.5 for Trevin.
I'm taking the over for Trevin. I think he makes 4.
I'm taking under. Give me 3.
Okay.
3 for 6.
I think Trevin Nell is capable of 4.
He's capable
I don't know.
Of 20.
Maybe they take him out of the game completely because of what happened last year, and it's other guys that have to step up and make the open threes.
And BYU's best three-point shooter is not Trevin Nell, although he's second. It is Richie Saunders.
Okay, so I redact that statement. Knowing what Cincinnati knows about Trevin Nell, now I'm taking the under. Like, they'll push him off the line. They'll double him up at times. They're going to make it hard for Trevin Nell. Can other guys make the threes?
Get to the rim. Get to the free throw line then. Push the tempo. Get out in transition.
It's
going to be a tough game for BYU's offense.
It's not that BYU is a bad three-point shooter. Shooting team. I mean,
no.
they're what, number 76 in three-point field goal percentage at almost 36% as a team. That's a really good number.
It makes and takes some of the best numbers in the country.
BYU's defense is efficiency-wise pretty good, number 67. But where they struggle is something that we've talked about a bunch this year. Ironically enough, it's the other side of the three-point conversation. BYU gives up a ton of three-point attempts, and if teams can knock those down. It doesn't take science to figure it out.
Cincinnati doesn't try and shoot a bunch of threes.
But they don't. So will Cincinnati go off script knowing that BYU has a tendency to give up a bunch of threes? If they're there, will Cincinnati take more than they usually do?
I don't think so because they just don't have a lot of good three-point shooters. Like, no. Simas Lukosius is kind of the guy.
Yeah.
And that's it. They don't have a lot of guys that want to shoot the three.
See, to me, this spells trouble for Cincinnati. On the road, against a team that likes to shoot the three, is good at shooting the three, specifically at home, and they are going to have a hard time taking advantage of what BYU gives up. which is a lot of threes and looks at the three, I should say.
I think stylistically, BYU is going to be okay.
It's a good matchup for BYU.
They just can't depend on threes. Just be careful there. And then those matchups I talked about concern me a little bit, like the two bigs versus the
one big. Mitchell, yeah, specifically.
Yeah. He's not going to go off for like 25, I don't think, like a SAR, but he's a guy that can beat you in like 15 and kind of 8.
And how does BYU defend that, having learned from the past, like against those type of guys?
Yeah.
Like, is there any sort of wrinkle in there?
And they got a rim protector, which is always tough too, and Aziz Mandego. And again, that guy's won his last two with two different teams against BYU. So win it. Come on. Okay.
Beat Bandego.
Bandego. Would a win over Cincinnati prove to you BYU's turned a corner?
Almost. Not quite. Like, BYU, if they were a car, let's say, that the road's a little icy and you're moving downhill and you're...
Shout out to, like, the whole southern half of the country that's,
yes,
like, had snow in Florida.
Yes.
What?
You're pushing on the brakes and your car's not stopping. Well, there was enough traction to slow the car down and stop it in Boulder against Colorado. Like, there was that turning. Okay, so the car has stopped and the ice has melted a little bit. Can BYU turn it around and go back around the corner and up the hill? If this BYU team can beat Cincinnati and get to 4-4 in Big 12 play, take care of business as a home favorite, then I feel like they've started to turn the car around. Now, if they go and beat Baylor and string together a three-game win streak and they're above 500 in Big 12 play for the first time, then I'd say, okay, they've turned the corner, they flipped around, and they're moving back up. So it's going to take a win against Cincinnati and Baylor, a three-game win streak in total, if you couple in Colorado, for me to say, okay, they've flipped it around, they've turned the corner, now they're headed back the right direction.
Me too. You need to win three in a row. A two-game win streak would be BYU's first in Big 12 play. And BYU hasn't won two in a row. They've beaten three of the bottom kind of five teams in the league. Cincinnati would be another one of those, Spencer. Like, BYU's supposed to win that game.
Yeah.
Baylor, on paper, BYU is probably supposed to win the game.
58% chance.
But Baylor's top 30 team in KenPom, that's a good win. Cincinnati, top 50 team. Like, you're getting good net wins. You're getting quad one, quad two kind of games. So that would be, yes, they've turned a corner. I think what we need to see as well is a close game that BYU wins. That would help. Listen, if you blow them out, you avoid needing a close win. So that's sort of interesting to me. It's like in football, like, oh, a million tackles. So someone has to tackle them unless they run out of bounds. So the tackles somewhat are overrated to me.
A lot of tackles is not necessarily a good thing sometimes, especially when it's like a safety.
Was it 25 yards down the field? Like, or was it, what was the down and distance? It's different. Can BYU beat Cincinnati at home, a game they need to have if they're going to feel like they're going to get to the NCAA tournament?
Yes.
And then Baylor, you need to stack quad one wins at some point.
Yeah.
And Baylor looks like it could be one of those opportunities. So I like this little home stretch for BYU. Take care of business on a Saturday against Cincinnati. The next three Tuesdays, by the way, are unbelievable for BYU basketball. The Tuesday home games. It's three of the next four.
Oh, yeah.
I wish some of these were Saturdays, but being in the Big 12, playing these big games.
Count them out, baby.
Baylor.
Yep.
Arizona.
Yep.
And Kansas.
Kansas!
I mean, these are huge opportunities on Tuesday nights to stack wins that matter on Selection Sunday.
BYU has to win one of those three reference games. Has to win one of those three if they have any shot of getting into the NCAA tournament, I feel.
You can't just beat the teams below you.
You need like a wow
win.
You're
going to have a resume that matters in March.
You need a big-time win.
Sure.
Notably a quad one win. And those three home games, depending on where Baylor is right now, would qualify as quad one games. I believe Baylor's still top 30.
Yeah, I think so. I'm looking it up.
Okay, it shifts by the day.
So
20,
yes.
Okay.
Yep, top 30.
BYU desperately needs a quad one win.
Yep.
Beat Baylor.
0-4 right now.
That adds more to the conversation of turning the corner. Like, now you've revved the engine. You're spinning the tires as you turn the corner if you beat Baylor.
And maybe you kick them into a quad two. Because, I don't know. Sometimes you beat a good team, they go down. BYU's got opportunities here, and we keep using the O word in the Big 12, right? Hey, got big games coming up. Let's go.
Yes. Our question of the day: what would it take for all of you to feel like BYU men's basketball has turned the corner? What's it going to take? Right? They slowed down going down the hill against Colorado. They stopped the car. How do they turn the corner and get it going back in the right direction? At @KYoungs_beard on X.
Holding on to that beard that got shaved.
Kevin Young's beard has a social media account.
Nice.
Yep. A winning streak. The second half of the Colorado game made me feel as if BYU could have found their groove. Now beat Cincinnati, get a few wins.
Yep.
Wins are confidence builders for the team and the fans.
It's really a question of whether you think it's after the Cincinnati game or the Baylor game. There's no argument that after the Baylor game, BYU would have turned a corner if they've won three in a row, including those two additional games. It's whether you feel like after Saturday they do. The means matter, too. It's not just winning. It's how you play.
Yeah.
And if BYU continues to look fluid and more like the offense that we thought they could be, they put up a Big 12 high 1.3 points per possession the other night. That was great. Keep that going. It's not Colorado on Saturday, though. It's a better defensive team, a top 10 defensive team in Cincinnati.
Okay, we mentioned a couple of numbers to watch. Against a team like Cincinnati, the 1.1 points per possession probably resonates louder for BYU's win probabilities.
That would be pretty good. I'd probably take 1.0.
Again, I would love for BYU to make 10 threes against Cincinnati, but again, Cincinnati does not allow a lot of three-point attempts.
If they go 8 for 22, that's probably good.
Awesome.
Enough.
Yes. You're still shooting at that point 40% from the three-point line, and that's going to give BYU a 1.1 points per possession or better if they do something like that. So those are the numbers to watch. Intrigued to watch. Like, the idea of BYU being 5-4 before they go to UCF is really nice.
That'd be nice.
Because if they're not 5-4 going to UCF and they're like 4-6, 4-5, and then you go and you lose at UCF, then you got to come home and take on Arizona. Yeah. The pressure just mounts.
Yes. Got to win Saturday.
Take care of business now. Tuesday. At Real Sports Fan on X says, did you read that one, by the way?
No.
Okay, taking care of business at home, being more aggressive in transition, getting to the hoop, dominating more inside, and taking care of the ball.
Yeah, Bandego's going to be sitting there. So kick to some open three-point shooters, perhaps. Okay. We'll see.
All right. On to more college basketball. Specifically, Bart Torvik, who released the end-of-season 2025 NCAA tournament seed projections from, again, College Basketball Report.
Oh, just like as of now, yeah.
Has BYU as an 11 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take that right now?
Yeah, because BYU, to me, is not in the tournament as we speak. But if he's saying they're an 11, they'd be in, I would take it right now. I hope that BYU can do better than 11 by the end of the year. I don't know for sure. I just want this team to be in the tourney, and then, obviously, we all want a win. Like, last year was not good enough. Get in the tourney, win a game, and then you have a chance for one game to the Sweet 16, which BYU's done twice ever, needed the National Player of the Year. So hopefully BYU can get to the tourney. I would take that right now.
I absolutely. Who wouldn't? BYU's not in the conversation right now, other than College Basketball Report, who is projecting here. But in terms of what they have earned right now, they're nowhere near making the tournament. Those opportunities, there's that word. Lie
you have
ahead.
To get Quad 1 wins. BYU has
lie ahead.
None.
So this is saying that BYU will pick up a few of those. To me, an 11 seed and not in the first four, by the way. Not in a playing game. It's just BYU standalone 11
seed. I'd probably
seed.
Take first four right now, frankly.
Okay, most fans would.
Just get in.
Most fans would. But even this report says not first four. You're just an 11 seed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're crazy if you're not saying, yep, give me all that. That tells me BYU probably.
Some of you are crazy, though. We know this. Let's not act like it's not true.
Okay, they won at worst 8 conference games and probably won a game in Kansas City in the Big 12 tournament and are on the right side of the bubble.
Yeah.
Okay, so you win 9 or 10 total Big 12 games, including the postseason tournament in KC, and you have enough on your resume. So, yeah, I would take that right now.
I don't care how. I just want to see BYU in March Madness. Okay. Let's go. Are you rooting for Chiefs and Commanders to win in the NFL Championship Sunday to guarantee that a former Cougar or Cougars win the Super Bowl?
I feel like if I answer no to this, I'm in significant hot water.
I would say you'd get a yellow card, yeah, if you say no. Are there BYU fans that root against the Chiefs? Maybe like Raiders, Broncos, Chargers fans?
All the AFC West BYU fans?
They're like, enough of Andy! Like, he's won a cup.
We love Andy, but he's got enough. That's the whole argument. Like, he's got enough!
His cup runneth over.
He's got enough, okay? And it's not anti-Andy Reid. It's more anti-Mahomes and Chiefs, Kelsey.
Oh,
yes,
wait.
That whole idea. But guess what? We said the same thing about the Patriots when they had their dynasty going too. It's like
they get old.
This is hate. Yeah, hate they the get same old. Old story.
But it's
this
our is, dude though.
This is greatness.
And Kingsley's on
this.
The,
this is greatness.
On the team, yep.
So
Commanders, Michael Davis.
That would be fantastic to guarantee that a BYU guy would win a Super Bowl ring. The one caveat I have here is I really like Josh Allen as a person. I think Josh Allen, and the Buffalo Bills story is absolutely heartbreaking.
Brigham handed him a loss in his last college game.
Yes.
The Poinsettia Bowl. We remember that.
The Bills' history in the playoffs is just gut-wrenching. No. It's so sad.
You think the Lions are in pain?
Oh, the Bills. So if this were not to happen, like let's say that the Chiefs are not in the Super Bowl and the Bills are, man, I'd probably be pulling hard for the Bills just for that whole fan base just after what they've gone through. And wouldn't it be poetic that their first of their four Super Bowl losses happened against Washington with a missed field goal to the right? What if they played Washington, the Commanders, in the Super Bowl and made a field goal?
Mark Rippon.
In the game.
Eat your heart out. Yeah, Bills Commanders would be fun because then it's like, oh, or, you know, Eagles won recently. It's like, okay, Bills have a legit shot here. Yet Commanders with Jaden Daniels, whom BYU also beat in 2021 when he was at Arizona State.
Okay, similarities.
Seeing a pattern here? Yeah, that'd be interesting. But I am rooting for, I think, this.
I think.
From an entertainment standpoint, I'd honestly rather see the Bills.
I want that.
I almost want that context
of just like the Bills.
I love a good ribeye. I don't want it three nights in a
row. They're the lovable losers.
That's the Chiefs right
now.
They're
the lovable losers. It'd be nice for them to win one finally. Yeah.
Commanders are fun to watch, man. I love watching them play football.
Bills Commanders. Throw it back to that Washington-Buffalo Super Bowl when the Bills had a field goal to win it and missed it.
That'd be interesting.
All right.
Okay, men's basketball taking on Cincinnati tomorrow. As mentioned, 9:30 Eastern. They moved this back recently, about 30 minutes on ESPN2. We got the pregame coverage for you on BYU TV, BYU Radio. Guest analyst in studio, Eric Mika, are going to come hang out tomorrow night.
After the break, BYU defensive coordinator Jay Hill joins the show.
Okay.
To discuss BYU's dominant defense over the last season. What is sustainable going into next season? 22 picks?
Do it again. Let's go.
This is one of the greatest BYU teams ever. They had a elite defense.
You beat Kansas State, Baylor, and Colorado, and SMU. You beat a college football playoff team head-to-head.
From year one to year two was amazing under Jay Hill.
Welcome back on a Friday. We are live in Studio B with your day-to-day BYU sports play-by-play. We're over in the Cougar Council Room now alongside Jerem Jordan. I am Spencer Linton, and we are counseling with the defensive coordinator of BYU football, Jay Hill. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Okay. Good to be with you guys.
It's been a little bit, and you've had time to process just how incredible that season was in many ways. 11-2 coming off a dominant victory over Colorado. What has the post-bowl game time been like for you as you look back on the 2024 season?
Well, it's been busy. We landed in Provo after the bowl game, and then about 6 hours later, we went up and just hung out at our cabin and just relaxed for a couple days. And then we went right into recruiting, and then coaches go to the coaches' convention, and then we're right back to recruiting. So there's no rest for the weary, especially on those late bowl games when they're played later in the year. You just go right into recruiting.
There's signing day in December. You're getting ready for the one in February. You're re-recruiting your own players, one of which announced yesterday, Jack Kelly coming back. What does it mean to have him help anchor that defense again next year?
Well, we have great players, and keeping those guys around, and Jack's a good example, is so important to us and our future successes and stuff. We need to keep the guys that have helped build it, and Jack's one of those guys. So,
let's throw in Keanu Tanevasa and Hunter Clegg. I mean, there are some notable names coming through the portal, as well as keeping notable guys on your team. So how are you feeling about the recruiting as a whole, including the transfer portal?
Well, the transfers that we take are ones that we know everything about and know that they can play, one, and that they fit BYU, two. But I think those transfers you mentioned are so important to our future success. We're so excited about Keanu and everything he represents, and the player he is and the person he is the most important thing. He's a phenomenal young man. You mentioned Hunter Clegg. I mean, that's a big get for us. Tausili Akana is a big get. Those guys look good right now in their workouts. I'm excited to see him in spring ball. Those guys coupled with what we already have coming back is going to be big.
Backers and safeties, you're returning a lot of production there. D-line and corners, how much do you need to pull from the portal versus you feel good about who's coming back?
Well, I think it's important. I'll start with the corner group. I think it's important that those guys have an opportunity to develop and prove to us that they can be starters. If they can do that, then I don't think we want to go into the portal that much. I'd rather continue to recruit high school kids and develop the ones that we have here. And there's some guys now that can really play. Mori Bamba's back, hopefully. You've got Jonathan Cabea that played a lot, Trey Alexander, Marcus McKenzie.
Evan
Johnson. So those guys can play.
That's a lot of guys.
We need them to develop. And I think them having the opportunity to prove who they are will be able to do that. And then on the defensive line side, I feel good about that group. We have returners that have played a lot. We have young guys there, but they're the future of the program. They need an opportunity to prove that they can be that. And, you know, we lose some critical guys. Tyler Batty, obviously, Jacob Robinson, Mark Collins, Blake Mangelson. But our guys will step up. I think they'll play great.
So spring ball is huge for that. You're going to evaluate huge. That and be like, okay, we may need a guy or two depending on this. Or, hey, we feel pretty good based on what we did in the spring.
Yeah, we get 15 practices in the spring, and then you get another 25 in the fall camp before you play a game. So 40 practices give us a great opportunity to get those guys ready to play. And then, you know, you have your preseason games. By the time we get to the Big 12, those guys better be ready to go.
Jay Hill, BYU defensive coordinator, is with us on BYU Sports Nation. As you assess what your defense did as a whole and look at just the unbelievable production, and we were joking about it before we went to break, 22 picks. Oh, it's easy. Just replicate that. It's all good.
Just do it again.
Lead the country in that again. What do you feel like is sustainable and realistic from what your defense did a season ago?
Well, the goal is always going to be to be the number one defense in the Big 12, and we did that this year. I think we led in points and yards and turnovers, and the real main key categories we led the nation, or we led the Big 12 in. Nationally, we led it in interceptions. I think we were third in the nation in turnovers. And there were some real key things, but we have areas that we can get way better at. Third downs, red zone, and so we know we've not arrived. We've got great pieces coming back to the puzzle. I expect next year to be better than this year. So is it sustainable? I don't know. I mean, you can only keep climbing so far before there's no more spots to climb. But I like where we're at, and we're heading in the right direction.
What moments or plays stick out from the season, especially from your defense, where you were like, hey, that was incredible, and it helped us win 11 games?
Well, the play that kind of started, I think, maybe the Mark Collins interception down at SMU, just because that's where the defense became the defense, is they were put in a couple hard, tough situations, and to keep that offense without a touchdown was enormous. I think that's where we gained the confidence that we can be a great defense. And then the Tommy Prassas scoop and score against Kansas State was huge. I mean, that was kind of what sparked us to know that we can be one of those top teams in the Big 12. What else stands out? Glasker's interception against Colorado, and then him doing the
Deion
Shuffle.
That was so good.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of excited up in the box. I don't know that was great sportsmanship. I was excited.
After the game, he said, I loved Deion growing up. That was like a respect thing.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that with Glasker, because I think we all did, right? I loved Deion growing up, and so to see Glasker do that and to play as well as they did in that Colorado game was so huge. Not just for me to watch from, you know, up in the box and be proud of those guys, but for them and their confidence and what the development of the defense represents, I think that game was huge.
How did you dominate that game defensively in the way you did? Because at the press conference, you kind of had a smile like, hey, I know we're going to play well in this game. How did you come up with a game plan that was so good?
Well, so first off, I have phenomenal assistant coaches on our side of the ball. Justin Enna, Gennaro Guilford, Sione Puha, Kelly Popinga, those guys are phenomenal. And then you throw in the mix like a Chad Quaha and Gary Anderson's and stuff. I really believe we got the best defensive staff in the country. And I'm lucky to just be with those guys because they help me be much better. Having said that, we get to make no plays in a game. So it's all the players. I thought that they were extremely prepared with the film that they had watched. I thought that they had handled every practice in the bowl preparation the right way. And there's been very few times in my career where you watch a team practice as good as we did and then go lay an egg. That wasn't going to happen. Not as good as we'd practiced. I just felt strongly that they were going to play great because of how they had practiced. And that's a tribute to the players, their toughness, their discipline, how they prepared. And I knew we were going to play good.
Yeah. You told me as much before the game. You said, watch. Yeah. We're going to play well.
It's not every game that's that way. You don't just know you're going to go out there and play great every game. That particular game, I felt strongly we were just because of how they prepared.
And it was a fun, motivating game because this team clearly showed, like, different motivations throughout the year, whether it be 4.5 wins or 13th in the Big 12 or whatnot. Oh, we got the Heisman Trophy winner and maybe the first quarterback taken. Like, it's easy to get up for a game like that, and you guys showed out.
Well, and I think that they knew that, right? Because the Colorado was one of those offenses that if you're not ready and you don't go play good, they can embarrass you. They could put 500 yards and 60 points on you. And they had done that their last game of the regular season in the Big 12. They just steamrolled their opponent, and they were flying high, and they just won the Heisman with Travis. And like I say, some people say maybe the best quarterback in NCAA football last year, and they can embarrass you if you're not ready to go. And our guys knew that, and they handled the process and preparation the right way.
When you look back on how the season began for you personally with the health scare and then everything that transpired after that, how do you process that mentally and deal with just some, it was significant adversity, but then to see how the season panned out and what came to fruition, what's that been like for you emotionally?
Well, God is good. You know, you look back on life and things like that, and you can just kind of see God just lifting you and carrying you along the way. And I think that that was another one of those processes that occurred. I thought, like 6 hours before the heart attack, I was in great shape and I would run and lift and had my body in good shape. And then all of a sudden you're not. And it's such an eye opener to know how fragile life can be. And I don't take anything for granted, especially after that situation. I'm grateful for the coaches that rallied behind us. I'm grateful for Coach Kalani, who was so good about me making sure I took care of my health, and administration, Tom and Brian and those guys were so good to come to the hospital and just make sure everything was good, and then reiterate that you got to take time, you got to make sure you're healthy. And I did. I came back slowly after that, and I worked, and I think I worked hard, but I mean, I relied so heavily on the coaches and the players to get things done. And I can't say enough about those guys just rallying behind that weird situation and what that represents for me. And it teaches you that, you know what, people around you can really lift you up if you let them.
How are you feeling now?
Good. I mean, that's the craziest thing is before the heart attack, it felt great. And 6 hours after the heart attack, I really felt pretty dang good. But you just got to kind of work your way back in intelligently. I didn't want to be dumb and all of a sudden have another issue, but I feel good. I have felt good, and we'll just keep our fingers crossed that nothing happens.
Absolutely. And this season was unique in that you were not on the sideline. You said, I need to be in the press box, and you wouldn't even go down at halftime, right?
Yeah.
You would stay in the box.
So I went down, and I apologize to the players for this, but it was the Arizona State game. I felt strongly I needed to go down at halftime, and I didn't because I didn't want to screw up the mojo. And after the game, my wife got after me a little bit, and she just said, you need to be down with the players. They need to see that you're okay. They need to see that you're the one making the adjustments, not just telling the coaches what to do, but that you're in there making the adjustments. So it was the last game, Houston. I went back in the locker room at halftime, and then at Colorado I did too, just so the players knew I'm okay and I'm making these adjustments and we're going to be okay. And I think that helped. I think that helped just in the way those guys played in the second half of those games, and and they deserved that.
And which game did Kalani have to pull you out of dancing? He's like, Jay, what are we doing here?
I don't know. That ended up being a couple too many times. When you're like 7-0 and feeling good, and then 8-0 and you're feeling good and things are rolling, you're just excited.
Listen, you can bust out the Roger Rabbit and the Cabbage Patch anytime you want, Jay.
I'm a horrible dancer, but I like dancing after the games with the players.
Hey, and by the way, your wife, Sarah, an elite co-defensive coordinator, is she not?
She is elite. And you know, I got to say this. She helped so much in that transition because it was the Kansas State game, and we were up in the – I was actually down on the field before the game, and my heart started racing because it was like – it was a big game and everyone knew it, and the atmosphere in the stadium was already electric an hour before the game, and I'm like, oh my gosh, my heart is going crazy. So I went up in the box and I took my blood pressure and it was through the roof, like kind of like when I was having my heart attack. And I'm like, I gotta find out how to calm down. So I'm up there trying to calm down, and she comes up and immediately things were better. And then so she left during the first half, and then that explosion that happened right before halftime, my heart was just racing again. So I took my blood pressure at halftime, and it's through the roof again. And just having her around just has its way of calming me down. And I'm grateful for her for that. But that was a good example of why she was so special to have this year.
Outstanding. Jay, we appreciate the insights. So glad you're doing well. Absolutely. And good. It's so fun to watch the BYU defense. Can't wait to watch them in 2025.
Can't wait.
Let's go.
Thanks, Jay. Let's go. Women's Hoops taking on Utah tomorrow afternoon. Speaking of a racing heart, you can listen to Jason Shepherd on the call on BYU Radio or watch on ESPN beginning at ESPNU at 4:30 Eastern time.
After the break, headlines include, we talked about it already, championship weekend for Cougars in the NFL. Men's volleyball trying to make a statement in their second match against UC Irvine, and more. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social. We're on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to the show. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. Happy Friday, everyone, and happy headlines.
Men's basketball host Cincinnati tomorrow night. Pre-game 9:30 Eastern on BYU TV, BYU Radio. Eric Mika in the house. BYU seeks its first two-game win streak in league this season. BYU 3-4, Bearcats 2-5 in the Big 12. ESPN gives BYU a 64% chance to win.
You missed it earlier. Some notable Cougars in the NFL playoffs in their conference championship games this weekend, specifically Andy Reid, Kingsley Suamataia, and the Kansas City Chiefs host the Buffalo Bills in the AFC title game. Michael Davis and the surprise Washington Commanders, team of destiny maybe, face the Philadelphia Eagles in Philly in the NFC title game.
Number 5 men's volleyball plays round 2 with number 2 UC Irvine on the road tonight after a 5-set loss Wednesday night. Watch it at 9 Eastern on ESPN+. The Cougars seek a revengeful split.
Yes, please get it done. Man, that was tough to watch them losing 5 sets, but they played super well. BYU women's basketball against Utah tomorrow. Cougars looking to bounce back after a tough loss at Iowa State on Wednesday. This is the type of win that could potentially turn your season around in a hurry.
Absolutely.
Tip-off, 4:30 Eastern, live on ESPNU. Listen on BYU Radio.
Gymnastics hosts rival number 5 Utah at the Marriott Center tonight, 9 Eastern on ESPN+. So Friday night, Saturday afternoon,
BYU-Utah
games. BYU put up a season high Monday night, competing for a third time in the last 8 days. Tonight, you can watch this, 9 Eastern on ESPN+, with Spence.
BYU baseball's Stone Cushing named to the 2025 preseason All-Big 12 team. The relief pitcher finished the 2024 regular season as the Big 12 leader in saves and game finishes. Baseball opening their 2025 season at Fresno State. Hard to believe. In like 3.5 weeks.
It always surprises us.
On Valentine's Day, 14th, 15th, and 17th for that 3-game series against the Bulldogs.
Give me a dude whose name is a sentence.
Stone Cushing.
I like that. Future BYU Cougar, one of the top-ranked amateur golfers in the nation, Kihei Akina, named to the 2025 U.S. National Junior Team roster. That's big time. Akina joins the Cougars this fall.
Huge recruit. I mean, we're talking, we spend a lot of time talking about like top
Yegor,
25
AJ
guys,
level.
Right? He is that level in golf.
Yes.
Huge, huge. Yeah, and his brother, Keanu, is a notable BYU golfer as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Indoor track and field travels to New York City to compete today and tomorrow at the Dr. Sanders Scorcher, hosted by Columbia University.
Again, that sounds like a description, not a proper noun.
The Dr. Sanders Scorcher. Taylor, we could say about Taylor Sanders
Taylor,
at some point in volleyball.
Taylor Sanders Scorcher. And swim and dive heads to Colorado this week. They're taking on the Air Force in the penultimate meet of the season.
The entire Air Force?
The whole.
Oh, man, they're in big trouble.
All of them.
they're in big trouble.
Top Gun Maverick, look out.
Coming up, BYU gymnast Brinley Anderson and Kylie Aquinto will join us in studio to discuss a very busy 8 days for the team and finding momentum going into tonight's meet. Stay with us. Welcome back to BYU Sports Station. We are live in Studio B and continuing with our bevy of elite guests. Specifically, two of the top gymnasts from the BYU women's team. They are Brinley Anderson and Kylie Aquinto, ahead of a really fun matchup tonight against rival Utah in Big 12 conference action. It's been busy for both of you, so let's just go ahead and start there. 3 meets in 8 days now, including tonight. So, Brinley, what's it like to compete that often in such a short amount of time?
I think it's kind of fun, actually, because once you, like, get in the rhythm of competing, it's, like, basically every other day. So then it's like, oh, yeah, like, let's just go again. Come on, we got it, you know?
How do you feel, Kylie?
Yeah, I mean, the same. It's a little busy, but it's meet, day off, meet again. But kind of like she said, once you get in the rhythm, it's almost easier sometimes. Sometimes practice is a little bit harder than the meets, honestly. So it's like, meet day, let's go. So
okay, now let's just throw this in there. Most people don't know that Kylie took a pretty bad spill in practice. And she's just up at the next meet competing like whatever. It's all good. Gymnasts don't get enough credit for how tough you are, Kylie. So how are you feeling after a tough fall in practice and trying to get back to that all-around shape?
Yeah, I'm actually feeling better. So every day I've been improving a little bit, I think. So, yeah, honestly, I feel pretty good for having two meets just barely. So I'm ready to go again.
And luckily, gymnastics is not physically demanding, said no one. Three meets in 8 days. Like, how do you handle that with your body? I'm sure you're crazy sore, but you're back on the beam tonight.
Yeah, we just got to make sure we hit our rehab and got a cold tub, so.
Okay, I was going to say, what's involved in rehab there? We hear about that a lot.
You're going hot, cold, what are we doing?
We do a lot of massages. We do shockwave. What's that?
I know it was a transformer back in the 80s, but what does shockwave
even do?
I don't know.
They tell us to do it, so we do it.
Who knows? Like,
do this.
Yeah. Blood flow or whatever.
Okay.
It almost looks like an ultrasound thing, but it's a weird pain.
I don't know.
You just got to try it.
But it
just
works.
Go experience it.
Can't explain.
Go experience it. We just wander in. Can we get the shockwave?
What's the fast track to getting rid of the volleyball-sized purple and black bruise on your shoulders and legs? Because it's so crazy how often this happens. I was talking to Coach Young about this, and he's just like, you wouldn't believe just the bruises, Spencer.
Yeah.
Like, how do you manage that pain and get up and compete again?
Ibuprofen.
Okay. Well, not just that, but so well. I mean, Brinley, you're coming up outstanding back-to-back beam performances. So how are you able to maintain that level, especially with some early season frustrations for the team overall? So what's the key to you finding your groove on the beam?
I think you have to trust your training because we've worked so hard all preseason that we are prepared. So you just need to trust your ticks in the box, get up there and do what you know works, and like trust yourself because you've done the work already and this is the fun part.
Just a casual get up on there and do the splits? It's just every day, just normal. This is normal activity. How was it in the Best of Utah meet, by the way? That's there are two quad meets. It's all day, a ton of teams. How was that event for you guys? Coming off a season high, by the way. Congratulations.
Thank you. Best of Utah is a super fun meet. It's on podium, which adds a little bit extra. I don't know. I feel like podium, the floor is a little bouncy. The vault's a little bit more bouncy, too. So it's kind of nice. Podium's super fun to compete on. You feel a little bit more special going up on the podium or whatever, you know. And it's fun to see all the teams in Utah. You know, you have some old teammates or whatever, so it's fun to say hi to them and stuff. And it's a good meet, good competitive meet.
Gymnastics is so unique because people are like, oh, are there teams that you hate or whatever? And it's like, well, you don't really go ahead. It's not like you're playing offense and defense against each other.
There is beam fence, as we've chronicled.
You have a solid beam fence led by Brinley. But what's that dynamic like? Because in many ways, you are just competing against yourself and your best score. So how do you take on that whole challenge of the unique dual meet tonight, specifically against Utah?
Yeah. You want to go me?
I think I was actually talking to Braden Brown about this. It's just so different than, like you said, football, because I feel like the whole team is out there at the same time doing football. Like, we only have one girl going at a time. So, like, it's easier to, like, cheer for the other team if I know them. Does that make sense? Like, they're still just, like, my friend. So I want them to succeed, you know?
Sure. Yeah, again, it's a unique dynamic. Kylie, how is it for you?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, like, in club, gymnastics is a lot more of kind of, like, an individual sport or whatever. I mean, you have your team scores or whatever. But, and then when you get to college, it's, like, everything is for the team. So even when you're up there all alone, like, you're still doing it for your team. And it's weird because it's a team sport, but you're individual. But I think, like, it helps way more to have the team.
Yes.
Like, you're doing it for more in college than just yourself.
Yes.
So you want to do the best for a team each time you go up there.
It's always great to plug into something that's bigger than you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
life sporting, if it's just about you, come on. That's selfish. You guys go way back, right? You competed in high school together?
Yeah.
Timpanogos?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right? What's that relationship like as you are at BYU now and on the same team again?
It's the best. Like, it's actually unreal. I'm just, like, all my best friends are here, and I just seriously love it.
Well, and you can really lean into that. when things aren't going as well as you would like them to be. And this team has been through some adversity in the early seasons, sickness, some injuries. Certainly, as you've supported your great teammate, Chloe Hoke, who's going through losing her mom and a personal tragedy, that weighs heavily on a team. And so when you have the bounce back performance after kind of you're watching this slide and this emotional dip, what did it mean to go out and perform well in the Best of Utah meet, and how do you capitalize on that and carry it forward? We'll start with you, Brinley.
So after our home meet last week, Guard made sure to remind us that we need to stick together because that's how we're going to be successful. So I think just like staying with our teammates, backing them up, and being there for them is what's going to help us be our best.
Kylie, can you speak to the courage that Chloe had to compete despite hearing the news that her mom passed away? Like, that is unbelievable.
She's amazing. She's probably one of like the strongest people I know, honestly. Like, it was incredible to see her do that. And, you know, she just had such a great meet, and we were all super proud of her. And I honestly don't know how she went up there in front of that crowd and on that beam and hit that beam routine like she did. But that's just a testament to how strong she is.
Like, incredible.
She's incredible.
Like, throws down a great score.
Amazing.
The day her mother passes away and said, and I'm summarizing significantly here, I knew that's where she wanted to be. I wanted to honor her.
Yeah.
I wanted to do that for her.
That's special.
Yeah, really cool, cool stuff. Okay, let's get ready for the meet tonight. What can fans expect if they're watching on ESPN Plus, or certainly if they are in the Marriott Center? What would you tell fans that they're going to see from BYU Gymnastics tonight, Brinley?
Sticks and hits.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was waiting for that.
I need a t-shirt. Do you guys have t-shirts?
Hits and sticks.
Actually, we do have
one. Do you really? I'll hit up Cook.
Hits and sticks.
Hey, he'll get you one. Okay. Yeah. For sure.
Now he feels pressure. We put him on blast. Guard.
Yeah, come on, buddy. One time he let me carry the silver medal around campus for a few hours. So
that's guard's, pretty cool. Guard's that's an honor.
Guard's big time. And it's against Utah. There's a rivalry, but like we talked about, it's kind of, hey, we focus on us and whatnot, but there's still that kind of fun energy with BYU Utah, right, Kylie?
Yeah, for sure. There's going to be a lot of energy tonight. I think they're dropping the curtain in the Marriott Center.
Nice.
So we're excited.
It's back. I think they fixed something that broke before a men's basketball game a few weeks ago.
Dropping the curtain. Let's go.
Yep, that's legit. Yeah.
We're excited. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Be ready for that. By the way, how many events are you competing in tonight?
I'm doing 4. I'm exhibitioning beam, so we're going to go 3 and then exhibition beam.
Okay, so we'll call it an all-around, so you're working your way back to that.
All-around. Love it.
Let's go. Great. Hey, let's give you all the BYU Sports Nation karma we can find. Send it to you to perform well tonight. We appreciate you being in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming in. Hits and sticks, beam fence. It's all coming up tonight. You can watch it on ESPN Plus at 9 Eastern, BYU versus Utah. Love this meet every year.
After the break, what would it take for all of you to feel like BYU men's basketball has turned a corner? More of your responses to our question of the day. This is BYU Sports Nation.
Hits and sticks, baby.
Yeah.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back with our question of the day. What would it take for you to feel like BYU men's basketball has turned a corner? At McKay Robbins, or sorry, McKay Dobbins.
Shout out St. Jeezy.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. On X answers consistently on both ends of the floor and proving consistency, I should say, on both ends of the floor and proving they can close out close games.
I would like a blowout. I want to see the close win, but give me the blowout too. Yeah, I like that idea, but I would also take, just win convincingly. You don't need it to be a close game.
There will be several close games in the future. And at some point, BYU is going to figure out how to close the deal.
Multiple.
But against Cincinnati, I'm with you. Win by 10 plus.
Yeah.
Just shut the door early. Yes. Let's go.
Just get them back for what they did last year, opening Big 12 play.
At @baller_Aiden on X answers, convincing wins in the next two games, win the turnover battle, and make free throws.
Okay, against Baylor, I don't need a convincing win. I need a 1+.
There's that close game potential.
Cincinnati, I'll take a 1+, but I would like a, Baylor's good. Like, I know they're not as good as they were maybe at the beginning of the season.
Their guards are super athletic. They're a little smaller, but they're good.
Oh, Roach, none your business. Yeah. All those guys, they're good, dude.
Our elite voice of the day presented by PAX, Healthcare Elevated.
Edgecomb, the NBA guy.
From @86WIKugong says, for me to feel confident this team has turned the corner and the ship is righted, they need to win 3 of the next 4. 3 of which are home games. If they split that following road trip, Cincinnati, West Virginia, I think the team will be in really good shape.
I think they would be too, yeah.
Just get to 5-4 for me.
Got to get your head above the water here, above 500, to feel like you've got a chance at 8 or 9 or 10.
Then there's confidence going to Orlando. Then you have some confidence.
BYU needs that because the road has been tough.
Yes.
UCF almost beat Houston at home. I mean, that's a tough place to play.
Win the next three. Then you got some confidence. Today's Rise and Shout Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Good luck to all the Cougs in the AFC-NFC Championship games. Andy Reid, Kingsley Suamati, and Michael Day.
Our thanks to today's guests, Jay Hill, the defensive coordinator of BYU football, and gymnasts Brinley Anderson and Kylie Quinto.
Sorry to Dennis, we ran out of time. All the shows are on demand on BYUSN.com.
For Jeremiah Spencer, shout out to Brogan Evanson. Nice. We'll see you tonight for BYU Women's Gymnastics on ESPN+. And the Beat basketball pregame tomorrow. Go Cougs!